Welcome to the System Speak podcast, a podcast about dissociative identity disorder. If you are new to the podcast, we recommend starting at the beginning episodes and listen in order to hear our story and what we have learned through this endeavor. Current episodes may be more applicable to longtime listeners and are likely to contain more advanced topics, emotional or other triggering content, and/or reference earlier episodes that provide more context to what we are currently learning and experiencing. As always, please care for yourself during and after listening to the podcast. Thank you. So, I wanted to have a conversation with you, or we talked about having a conversation for a couple reasons. One is that you have been helping me edit, go through old OG episodes as part of our effort at getting them back up, the ones that feel safe enough to just keep up and to stay.
Yes.
And some of those, every once in a while, there have been a few that it's like, we can put this back up. And also, I feel like we need to do a recap of the OG, like an OG recap. Mm-hmm. So some of those episodes will be coming later this year. But from that, I feel like one of the things that I am experiencing from listening to OG episodes is simply that I feel like I knew more about DID that first year than I do now.
Yeah, I also agree. In when I was listening to the podcast the first time, and also learning about my own diagnosis, that first year I knew far more and was far more open to talking about it and learning about it than now. Not that I'm not open, just like the avoidance has gotten very strong.
What is it? I feel like in narrative structure or in like quantum physics, like we're approaching this threshold where I'm running out of avoidance room, but the closer I get to that end point, that's really a starting point, the bigger the avoidance becomes. Like there's some math happening here.
Yes. I'm sure there's some math experts that can figure that out for us, but
I wish I knew the right words. I can see that, like the graph in my mind, but I've lost the words, but that's what it feels like.
Yeah.
Like as we're approaching, we need to actually talk about actual legit trauma and just process that and heal. The closer I get to that, the bigger avoidance becomes.
Right. It's like when you put two magnets together the wrong side. Like when they're far apart, it's okay. But when you get them close together, they really veer away, right?
Yes, exactly like that. And as it turns out, that causes some challenges.
Yeah.
We were also going to talk about communication. Here's what I want to say about that before we jump into that fun conversation is that at Healing Together, one of the people who presented this year, they are also going to come on the podcast later, but they, in their presentation, if I remember correctly, this was Kim, and if I remember correctly, she was a lived experience clinician. I think when they're on the podcast, they can clarify all that. But I think that is my memory. That is what I have written down. But what she did in her presentation was correlate safety and compassion, and that we cannot have compassion for ourselves until we have safety internally. Right?
How does that correlate to safety externally? Like, I imagine you can't have safety external, or you can't have safety internally until you have safety externally.
Right. And also, though, here's another like mathematical loop. You can't experience safety externally until you can experience it internally.
So it's like you have to backwards, like, you go in, like the polyvagal ladder, you drop down, you have to go back up the opposite way.
Yes.
So it's like safety, you lose it one way and you have to gain it in reverse or something.
Well, and I think that's what we are perceiving as we approach that we need to actually talk about things. And it, avoidance increases because it feels more dangerous because we're closer. Even though actually we are more safe, or we wouldn't be able to be approaching it. Does that make sense?
It does. It reminds me, so many times it reminds me of the Dan Siegel interview or Daniel Siegel interview you did last year. But when he talked about like one of the ways dissociation happens is when there's that loop that you can't escape, where it's like go towards the caretaker, but the caretaker's hurting you, so you have to run away from danger. And it's like that loop you can't get out of, and so you have to dissociate to solve the problem. And then when you go back to it, it literally feels in your system like you're dying, like your nervous system, not like system DID, like nervous system feels like you're going to die.
Right.
So like as we're approaching more of what led to dissociation to begin with, it feels more and more like we're going to die and we have to avoid it at all costs.
Right. So one thing that happened to me a couple years ago is, you know, my friend Peter, we were friends for several years since I met him through the podcast, and we became good friends. And then he even came out and met the family and visited us in person. And it was really lovely. And all of that is good. And also, the closer friends we became, the less I started communicating with him, until finally one time he was like, do I keep asking and checking in, or do I just need to wait for you? And he was very, very respectful about it. And also I felt bad because it's another example of this is really impacting my interpersonal relationships. It's really impacting friendships and relationships in ways I'm not even aware of, where I'm causing pain even when I don't mean to. I talked with him about it at the time as like how I feel like a cat, like the harder someone tries to come and pet me like a dog, the more skittish I become. After this session, when we talked about it, like in Zoomies on the community about, I mean, it wasn't actually Zoomies, but we had a drop in Zoom during Healing Together, right? For people to come and process. And when we were talking about it, that same cat image came up of like being this skittish cat where the harder people try to approach, the more skittish and avoidant I become, right? And it makes me nauseous just thinking about that. But to come full circle, she then said, only as we have compassion for ourselves, then can we have communication internally, that we can't even get to internal communication until we're having compassion for ourselves, which then complicates that avoidance and the skittish cat. Maybe that's what we'll call it, the skittish cat. But it complicates it because when I am not communicating internally, that also impacts people externally and around me in my life.
Yeah. Well, and not just you, everyone, or at least my experience matches yours. So I imagine it's something that we all experience in different ways. I wonder too about that piece where, like at the beginning, it was easier to know more because we were in like the information gathering, like learning so much, and all of it felt so validating and reassuring and like, yay, this is good stuff.
So it was like cognitive and left brain, and our right brain experienced the validation of, oh, someone gets it. Help is coming.
Right. But then at some point it like hits, like it gets too close to the trauma. It's like, okay, no, now we have to do these things, not just know about them and learn them. But we have to do them. And so then we pull away and like the voices inside get harder to hear, or dissociative phobia gets even stronger. So it's like moves us away from all those things we learned.
I think then the right brain experience becomes the fear of what the left brain starts to understand is the implications
of all that information. And I know that that's so common. So many of us, when we get our diagnosis, whatever it is, like we read all the things, we collect all the books, or we listen to all the podcasts, or we do all the things. Like people will write in the podcast and be like, I listened to all 500 episodes in 3 months. And yeah. I'm like, whoa.
How many do you remember?
That is going to backfire. Don't do that. But also seriously, like we do that, right? We read all the articles or we read all the book, like we dig for all the information because it's such a relief to finally have a framework and a name and language.
I get the image while we're talking of like, so this is just a silly personal story, not personal, but like when I was younger, whenever we would walk anywhere as a family, like my parents would walk behind us and my sister and I would have so much energy. We would like race to the end of the block and then we would run back to them and we race. Like, so we would keep running back and forth to the street until my parents caught up just because we had so much energy and we're like ready to go. It's almost like that, like our left brain ran up the spiral staircase, right? Like, oh, I'm so excited. I want to run. But our right brain is still down at the bottom, like taking really slow steps. And so we're like running back down and up and down, trying to wait for them to catch up.
You know what's wild about that image is that there's also like developmental and attachmentness in that because that's what toddlers do.
Yeah. Like they go explore and then come back.
Like the caregiver or the parent is home base and they come and touch base and then run off and explore and play, come back and touch base and run off and explore and touch base. So that same thing, even relationally, which we do in therapy, right? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, here's all the information about a really hard thing I'll talk to you about someday. And then we're not going to mention it for 6 months. Maybe next year we can process it, but let me just download some facts for you.
Right. Just gonna put it there and slowly back away.
Nobody move.
But maybe that's part of the process and it doesn't mean we forgot or like are backwards from the first year. Maybe it just means that's our left brain is still up there waiting and our right brain is just having a slow go of it. An old lady walk.
An old lady walk. Yes. Oh, so I have, oh no, hold on.
I'm going to take a drink since you're here.
I thought I was going to sneeze, but I lost it.
Oh, that would have been amazing. Your sneezes are the best.
I think I lost my sneeze. Okay, so the other thing related to this, that is a quote from Healing Together, but I have no idea if it came from the same session or a different session, because whoever of me wrote that down did not document the citation of the quote. But the quote was, how I experience the world in a non-pathological way. So even what you just said about just normalizing, this is part of the process, the moving forward, taking steps back, moving forward, taking steps back. I think that that's really important to remember because we put so much pressure on ourselves, which then when things go wrong or what feels like things going wrong, it adds to the shame, which I know I have zero problems with. Just kidding. In a very Dante kind of way of, I got it wrong again, when really that's part of the natural process of learning and growing.
Right. Like learning to walk, you fall down a whole bunch of times. That's not failing. That's part of the process. It's a lot of falling.
Right. How do you want to tie that into recapping our winter of hell?
Well, I think one piece you said earlier about the skittish cat and like the more someone tries to pet you, the more you get skittish. I feel like that was part of what was going on. Like, it's like that pattern that we see all the time in couples therapy. It's like there's the avoider and the pursuer. So then there's like one person gets skittish and pulls back or whatever it is, whatever reason they pull back. But then that makes the other person's anxious attachment get activated. So then they like pull more, reach out more. And then that makes the avoider or avoidant attachment person, like pull back even more. And so it's just like this vicious cycle that you can't get out of, because neither of you are feeling settled at all. And what you're doing to try to settle is what's actually activating the other person.
Yes. I would like to disclose that in this scenario, I am the avoidant person.
I think they probably could have deduced that.
Right. And so it really causes problems. And even just for keeping things neutral, it causes problems in lots of ways where I'm like, oh, maybe this is something I'm interested in, or maybe this or something. But then when that is too intense or too direct, then I'm like, no, I can't. Like, it has to stop now because I am completely activated. So instead of soothing, it has activated me, which is what we were talking about in the group with healing together, or after healing together, when we were sort of processing what we had seen and experienced. We were talking in that Zoom about how even in the community, I thought when I started the community, I thought I want to start the community and connect everyone that is writing to me with each other so that they have the same support, that is encouragement that they have given me, and I can offer them. And I already had the ideas of what books I wanted to write. Like, there were general notes of, I need a workbook and I need to do this and I want to give that and I want to do this. And I also thought I could teach this class and I could teach this class and I could do this and we could give art lessons and da da da. That's not what people wanted. What people wanted was me.
Because you're amazing.
Oh, well, it freaked me out.
Yeah.
And the other thing, just pragmatically, is that the first year of the community, I managed mostly okay. I really struggled with some of the transition where, like, they didn't want art classes. They wanted time to do art together, which is fine. I'm just using that example because we've talked about it already, so people know. And I don't mean that as that they needed or wanted something wrong. It just was different than what I had imagined in my head, right? The daydreaming versus real life.
The undissociating,
right?
Undaydreaming.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so I had to adjust to that, which was okay, but I managed that first year, because when we started the community, we were still in quarantine. We were in quarantine for a whole year after the community started, almost a year and a half. And in that first year and a half, we worked a job where we got up at 3 a.m. and did all of our work online. And it was all written correspondence and it was all paperwork online or setting up presentations online or doing them. And I was done with my work every day, usually by 7 or 8. And so that's actually where one of the things came from with the kids of wait until 8 o'clock before you come out and wake everybody else. Because one, we have half the kids are late sleepers and half of them are early risers. And also I was working.
Yeah.
And especially when they were little, it was not safe for them to be out and about by themselves. And so the kids would literally wait until 8 o'clock. And as soon as 8 o'clock hit, they could come out of their rooms. We would cook breakfast together and then do homeschool all day and spend all the time we wanted outside. And like, it was a really beautiful experience, even though it was also intense and difficult. So I don't mean to idealize it, but there were some really beautiful things about it. Mm-hmm. But I did my work literally at the end of the night before the day started. And when we came out of quarantine and I had to start doing work in real time again, I couldn't be at the community all the time anymore. I could no longer do both.
Right.
And there were ways I tried to talk about that or tried to explain it, but there were also ways I didn't know how to make that explicit. And as I had to miss groups sometimes, or things started shifting, or if I struggled and took a timeout or learned that I didn't have to be at every single group, and I couldn't when I had to work full time during the day. And people in the community generally, again, not doing anything wrong, but their structure and schedule and safety was centered around keeping meetings as they are. But those meeting times no longer worked for me.
Yeah.
When the kids are back in school and coming home at 3 o'clock every day, or when this is happening, the meeting times that were originally set up with the community
no longer fit. And then I changed time zones when I moved, and none of the times worked, but no one wanted to change the times. And so it made it hard. I couldn't get there. And then it created a rupture that no one knew words for, because not necessarily dramatic, but I could say I couldn't be there. I would try to work it into my day schedule. But if I say, okay, this group is on Tuesday mornings and I want to be there for Tuesday mornings, Tuesday morning is an actual work day. So if I want to be there at that time, that means I have to make up that hour at another time.
Right.
And then when I'm trying to add good things like you, like I can't keep adding without something giving. And I wasn't understanding what was happening. I was doing too many things. And then now single parenting again, because Nathan wasn't here. So when children came here, I had them by myself. I couldn't do everything anymore. And it was like everything kind of fell apart. Not really. Like, the groups have done a beautiful job, and there have been some core people that really stepped up and tended to each other and helped the groups keep going. And I want to keep the 501c3 unfolding so that can be my job and I can be there all the time. But I no longer could do like 3 full-time jobs all at the same time.
Yeah. Well, it's probably time that you aren't doing 3 full-time jobs anymore. That's too much.
I physically can't anymore. No. Did that go too off track?
No.
It just felt like an example of when some of this was happening, of not, of having, struggling with the impact on others when I didn't know how to communicate well about things, and struggling with compassion for myself when I just felt ashamed I couldn't be in all the places at all the times for all the people all at once.
Yeah. And then how, when that becomes too much, you just like stop it. Like the skittish cat, go run and hide under the bed. Not judging or mad, like that's just kind of what happens, right? And that kind of happened epically.
Yeah, what do you want to say about that? I will trust your lead on that.
Well, what I want to say is that we made it through and we're much better and stronger now.
I had to ultimately really decide what I wanted and needed in life, because all of this, as it sort of culminated, it happened at the same time as we had done unfawning.
Yeah.
And when I stopped fawning, everything fell apart. The only other time that I felt that to that degree is when I left Oklahoma and Nathan and the kids fell apart. Mm-hmm. But they came back together stronger because they were doing things for themselves rather than just codependently or me doing everything. So it was really important growth, but really, really painful for them and for me. Mm-hmm. And this felt like the same way, except messier, just because it was different. And I was still trying to do everything. So having the conversation with Nathan about, we can't be codependent anymore, and I can't wait for all of these other pieces to line up. And some pieces are never going to line up. Like, I can hold compassion for some things of, like, he never hurt me. He's very kind. He has been so supportive, especially even of the podcast. I'm so grateful for all of these good things. And also, we still had an arranged marriage. I'm still gay. Like, I can't undo those pieces.
Yeah.
Which surfaced the question of, what do I do with those pieces? And talking to him about the choices. And really, I didn't know this is where I was going, but really what it came to was, I felt in the context of unfawning, shiny, happy, and trying to undo that, and what do I do with Dante, and the religious trauma and all of that, it felt like not only do I need to get out of a church where I don't belong and am not safe in, but also it feels like they appropriated my vulnerability from shiny happy. Mm-hmm. And that in a way I was defrauded, even if also the people involved in that were not maliciously trying to harm me directly. Someone said, I wonder if it's written down. Oh yeah, this is it. The sticky just says swamp of shame. That's how hard our winter was.
Yeah.
And we were talking about religious trauma and that line about, I know this person or this person or this person wasn't trying to harm me directly. And also it's still true that I had to do conversion therapy, meaning reparative therapy, meaning get married in mixed orientation marriage so that you're not gay, and other abusive things I don't want to talk about right now.
Yeah.
And this person said, we can't just say it's the culture or blame it on the culture of the religion or faith tradition or high demand religion or religious trauma, because it's people are the survivors of an abusive organization, which is not the same as culture. And that just made me nauseous.
Yeah.
So that moved me to, like, I want to actually just file annulment so that it goes on record. Like, that was fraud. I was defrauded by what I was being taught and what was being presented, just for the record. And then talking about, okay, Nathan left Valentine's Day. That's sad, except there was a snow storm. So, like, there's more context to it. But he left February 2020. And so now it's been, or 2019.
I thought it was 19, but that was before COVID. Like, 2020 was right when COVID was hitting and pandemic.
Okay. Like
closing everyone down.
And he spent that with his parents. So it's been, I have to look, but it's been 4 or 5 years that we have already been separated. And so talking about what is looking like for finishing the paperwork of things, talking with the children about this, what does this look like? Talking with his family that's his fireball and letting those be his issues. And I don't mean any of that disrespectfully. He is co-parenting. He has the two boys. We're doing well. We have the same relationship. It already has been, but making that congruent on paper, because I just need to be me. And I told him that I cannot continue my healing in spaces where I'm not allowed to be me.
Yeah.
Was that too much to talk about for you?
No. Do you feel okay with all of that? Like, all of that being there and talking about it?
I do. I think it's things people already know other than saying it explicitly.
Mm-hmm. Did we already explain the fireball reference? I don't remember if we have or not.
I can't remember. Do you want to say it just in case? And maybe also Carebusters? Because I don't know if we ever said that on the podcast, but it came out of the mapping episodes. And yes. I know they've heard those.
Yes. So the Carebusting, we'll start with that. And the mapping episodes that came out recently. When we were talking about, I don't even remember which category they were in, probably like maladaptive middles, the ones that block care, like the ones that...
Perfect score.
Yes, exactly. That keep us from connecting with other people that are safe because it feels unsafe from the past. So when we were talking about that, also for context, we are both 80s children. Hopefully that doesn't age us too much. But so we love the Care Bears. And last year on Facebook Marketplace, we found like a dozen of the original 1980s plushy Care Bears.
Maybe more than a dozen.
Maybe more than a dozen. There's a lot. So they are up here in our room with us where we record. And so it came to me in that mapping episode, the Care Busters instead of Care Bears, right? Like the villains that prevent care from getting in. So that's the Care Busters origin story.
And that was timely because one thing that happened to us, and I'll try to say this respectfully, and we can edit as necessary. But one thing that happened is we recorded the mapping episodes like at the very beginning of November, mm-hmm. and clearly spent the entire 2 hours, both episodes, literally avoiding. You would ask me a question, I would not answer the question, and then ask you a question, which then you did not answer. It was like playing volleyball with no ball.
Right.
Like we just kept the volley going, but we were not actually answering the questions and not just avoiding mapping, but avoiding even the conversation about mapping.
Yeah.
And we were in sort of at the end of a hard season that just had been a lot of developmental and hard conversations that were good and healing that came as a result of unfawning and everything else. And clarifying those things. So we were in a hard place, not knowing that Christmas was about to get harder because mm-hmm. COVID and family and holidays and the book.
Dead dogs.
And dead dog. I'm so sorry.
Oh, it's okay. Just sweet, all the things.
Right. Right. Sweet puppy. All the things were about mm-hmm. to happen. And then the retreat was in January. So it was just like, I feel like from summer through Christmas was just epically brutal. Just one thing after another, us figuring out good and important things, but such a painful journey. And both of us being activated by each other's stuff, kind of the way you described with the
avoider, pursuer.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so that happening in the background. So then by the time we like get through retreat repair, not that we're through it, like that's always forever ongoing. All relationships repair is ongoing, right? Mm-hmm. But this side of things where that feels repaired and that group is continuing to grow, we come back to, okay, things are settled enough. We can let the mapping episodes air. They came out and we re-listened to them and we were like, whoa, how did we spend two episodes about mapping, not talking about mapping?
Yes. Yes.
To the point I even played the out-of-tune guitar. Do you remember?
Yes.
I was like, okay. I so don't want to have this conversation. Let me just tune my guitar while we're recording. What was I thinking?
We were very activated, but not even aware of it, right? Because it wasn't like a fight or flight activation. It was a like relational activation that didn't have words for, couldn't really point to like a bruise and say, look, I've got this bruise here. Like it was the invisible kind of, I'm not sure what's happening, but I know something's happening, but I don't know how to fix it, kind of activation.
Mm-hmm. And even when you would say, hey, I'm aware of this and this and this, can we talk about this or are you okay? My responses were like, I'm fine. And here's all the evidence that I'm fine. Completely missing what you were trying to say about the right brain experience and about what you were feeling about what I was feeling because I couldn't see what I was feeling.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was really hard. I'm so sorry.
No, it was really hard. I'm glad we're on this side of it. Sometimes I don't like that somehow I'm highly, like, you know how they talk about overly empathetic people are highly empathetic people who are actually just trauma survivors.
Right.
Right. Like that's what it is. Like I am so tuned to feeling what people are feeling. And I'm sorry that it's super like intrusive. Like, hey, you're feeling this thing that you don't even know you're feeling. Can you please deal with it?
And then
that's so rude.
Neurologically, my body is like, whoa, no, goodbye,
right.
Shut down. And then you're like, oh, look, see, there's the evidence. And I'm like further and further away and backing off. And then we're not even enjoying our relationship because like it's so activated and trauma. And not, I don't mean even trauma bonding, just our issues of our stuff playing out in real time and it being overwhelming to both of us.
Yeah.
It's really hard.
It was really hard.
Can I give a safer, small example of that to give details?
Sure.
So one of the things that we did this morning was work on a couple of OG episodes to get them up.
Mm-hmm.
And I was using my chart on the spreadsheet. And because it had the heading across the top of like episode and title and what the content was and what tags they are, because on the new website, they'll be able to just look up, I want to hear everything about avoidance. And then they can hear all those episodes.
Which will be every one.
Right. I don't mean which ones I act out avoidance.
Okay.
But Max, the Maxpert, mm-hmm. who is helping with the website, who is going to come on the podcast later Yay. And talk about the new website, is helping me do this for the podcast on the website. And so they've added tags so Hashtag. That people can look up stuff, which is super exciting, right? All the clinical interviews, bam, there you get them. All the ones about
nachos.
We should have a food tag. Mars yes. would be so happy yes. if we did that.
I am trying to, when I'm sending you emails with hashtags, if I remember, trying to include if there were food references.
That's funny. I will have to double check that got entered. That's amazing. We need that. Anyway, so because it has that, then on line two, the first episode started, right? So we get all the way down to, we're like on episode 79 or 80 or something. And all of a sudden, I'm realizing what is up on the podcast, like what is there to stay that we worked so hard to reclaim and is so hard because I'm facing all my own triggers, right? Which has been right. so helpful that you have been able to help with that. But it's been an epic project.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, the episode numbers on the podcast were not matching the spreadsheet.
They were one off.
They yeah. were one off. And I lost it. Not like angry throwing things.
No.
I mean like crybaby tears could not function.
Right. Your right brain or frontal cortex was gone and you could not like walk through the steps of figuring it out.
I couldn't think anymore.
Yeah. You just had like shame all over your face. I felt so awful for you.
I had done one more thing wrong.
Yeah. But.
And ruined it all.
Ruined it all. Thought all of our hard work was just lost forever. And the whole podcast was ruined. But we were there together, right? So you weren't stuck alone and floundering. Because if you were alone, the podcast probably would have come down and...
So close.
Sorry, everyone. But I was able to help you like walk through the steps. And eventually you went back all the way to the beginning and saw, oh yeah, it's an Excel spreadsheet. So row one is the title.
The headers.
The headers. So row two is when the podcast starts. But you were thinking that was the number one of the episodes.
So we inserted a column that shows the episode number, even though it's just one off.
Yes.
Because now it's not one off and everything is actually okay.
Yes.
Like it was a super easy fix.
It was.
But I literally felt like I had ruined everything again.
Right, right. And not just that, but you were so activated that you could not think through how to figure out what happened. It was just immediately everything's ruined and I can't, there's nothing I can do. Which I feel like we did that a bunch this fall.
Right.
Both of us.
Lots of examples. It was hard, but look at the growth that came out of it. And what is fascinating to me is that it has been 6, 7, 8, almost 9 months. Oh, not again. Like birth and the baby. There we go. Like since unfawning.
Mm.
And it literally took us 9 months to learn how to unfawn and figure out what we even need and how to say it out loud.
How to have words about it.
Right. Mm-hmm. So even all this hard stuff through the winter was about those things. What is it that you need? What is it that I need? What does that look like? How do we do that together without fawning?
How do we say what we're feeling and what we're needing without triggering, activating parts of us that get in trouble for telling?
In trouble for telling or shamed for needing.
Yeah, both.
Both.
Maybe even different parts, right? One part can't need, one part can't tell.
Right. Mm-hmm. And navigating, like, it's a holding both, mm-hmm. both and, except that it's us inside and then us together. Oh. Yeah. I think it's epic and it's huge because that comes back to that quote where we have compassion for ourselves, because the only reason we're even aware of both feelings is because we're paying attention to them.
Right. And we've made enough progress to see both, mm-hmm. even if it's hard to hold on to both at the same time, but we're aware of both.
Right. So with this example, with the spreadsheet, it wasn't like, I don't feel like I lost time in a Dante way, but it was definitely Dante influenced. And you sitting through this with me of, this isn't actually even a mistake. Like, it's just there and we can make it easier to read and have a plan so that it doesn't happen again. But there wasn't even a mistake involved. Like, right. Literally nothing was wrong other than how I looked at it.
Yeah.
Which feels very real life too. Like, such a metaphor.
Yeah.
So in other situations, looking at, this was not malicious. This was not intended to harm. And also, it still hurts someone, or you still have feelings about it. And it's okay for both to be true. You're not bad. I'm talking to two people that are not us, because that's easier.
Yeah.
You're not bad. And also, you have feelings that are valid.
Right.
And then the other way of, oh, this was a mistake, so I'm sorry about the mistake. And also, your feelings are valid. And also, my feelings, like being in the chair after the retreat, right? My feelings are valid. And being able to say both things and give space for all of that has been epic.
Right.
Also exhausting.
But exhausting. But like, that's why it's so important. And it's easier for me to see externally, right, than internally. But if in that moment, when you started feeling the panic of getting something wrong, if I had come to you and said, don't be stupid, like, you're fine, nothing's wrong, and been really dismissive, that would have just made it worse, right? And of course, I would never say that to you, because that's not how I would ever treat you. But I do that internally all the time. Like, when a shirt gets activated, feeling like they are whatever, insert, and then responding with, well, that's stupid, knock it off, you're an idiot. That doesn't help.
Right. We can't talk to ourselves that way.
No. Not if we actually want to get better.
And I don't want to talk to you that way either. I mean, I don't say those words, but when I thought you're talking, when you said, oh, I see this, you're feeling this, but I couldn't see I was feeling this. And I want to say, oh, but I'm not. Then it's doing the same thing to you, even though I don't know that I'm doing it maliciously. So learning that has been huge for me, because it helps me see differently what you're expressing, even while you're learning how to use words. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yes. And it's also extra complicated with, like, it's not okay for you, again, with the unfawning, right? For you to just be able to hold space for what I'm seeing, if it means you're getting flooded because you're having to see things that you're not ready for. There's a reason you can't see them, right? And so we have to find this balance of, I get to have my experience of something's wrong. You get to have your experience of, I can't see that right now. Like, we both have to have room for those to be true and tended to without it dismissing or flooding each other.
Right.
It's like, how do you do that?
I think the way I experience that with you is sort of the same thing inside out, where you or part of you or a shirt will be feeling something and trying to communicate that that is valid, but that there's also an and also, mm-hmm. or like memory time and now time of, yes, this thing, whatever the thing is, reminds us of memory time. And also, it's not happening right now. Here's how it's different. Let's look at how it's different and why that matters. It is hard work we are doing.
Yeah. Which is really funny because that's the episode I listened to, the last one this morning when we were trying to get things up, with Sasha talking about some stuff from the workbook that she was learning about having to notice differences and similarities between now time and memory time. It's just so like synchronous, like the stuff that we're listening to on the podcast OG. It's like stuff we're still wrestling with now or wrestling with again, or I'm wrestling with it because I'm like 12 steps behind you.
And also that's okay.
Yeah. It sucks for you.
And also I like to fall down the steps a lot. So I may not always be 12 steps ahead. Sometimes I'm 3 levels below. But that's part of it, right? And even in our workbook, we talk about that like spiral staircase of we are going in circles, but also we're going up.
Yeah.
But this winter, it didn't feel like we were going up. That was hard.
It felt like we were on one of those escalators that moves, but it never went anywhere. Ugh, it was awful. Sorry.
My sneeze is back.
Oh, no.
It's gone.
Should I tickle your nose? No. No, but this winter felt like we were running and running and running and getting nowhere.
It was a nightmare.
Yeah. I mean, we got somewhere. I know we did, but.
We got to an amazing place. It was interesting because I feel like the things I needed and things you needed last year, we finally got to a place this year of clarifying that for ourselves and for each other in a profound way that has completely changed our relationship.
Yes.
In good ways.
I would totally agree.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So another example of this playing out is conference time and presenting time. How do you want to talk about that? Yes. Because after they hear this, ISSTD will be happening.
Yeah. Well, that's a piece you and I have noticed as a pattern, is that conference times or presentation times can feel extra stressful for both of us. And it tends to bring out our avoidant pursuer pattern.
Right. So I'm trying to think of context that you have already shared that is appropriate to reference. So if I say too many, we can edit. Okay. So for example, when I am presenting, I have the stress of what I am actually going to say. I have the stress of researching that. I have the stress of getting the slides ready because that's required in this context. I have the stress of getting to rehearse that, which I don't really get to, not because of you, but because I'm a parent.
It's okay.
And it's hard to not just let that shut down. I mean, I know I'm not choosing it, but when I get to be with someone, I want to offer my presence to them and I want to be with them and connect with them and help them feel that and to validate, I finally got to meet you, or we got to have this conversation, or spending time together for connection. But when there's so many people wanting that or coming and going, or we're just trying to go up the elevator and they're like, sign my book or things like that.
Because you're a celebrity.
Oh my goodness, no. So, but that feeling, right? And those experiences, that's what it's like when we're at a conference together. And so navigating all of those pieces when in my daydreaming world, what I want to just be is on vacation with you.
Yeah.
And so for you, in context of what you've shared on the podcast before, like the canoe example, being left in the canoe, I'm not leaving you in a canoe. And also if I say, here, let's do this activity together,
but then I'm completely preoccupied or busy or literally gone having to do things for presenting or parenting or whatever. And you're left waiting, even though, or even when it's not malicious, you're experiencing the same thing, which is activating for that. And then that means I have done it wrong, which is activating for me. And that is an unhappy spiral. It is very unpleasant for us both.
Yes. And it is quick.
It's like so quick.
Those slides, those stairs disappear and it's just a slide.
It is a free fall that is hurts on the landing.
Yeah. Yeah. So because we have seen that pattern and can prepare and anticipate for it, we are both, at least I am, and I know you are too, working with our therapists about ways to mitigate that. Notice it when it's happening in the moment instead of 3 days or 4 months later, and then tend to it in ways that work for both of us or each other.
In real time.
In real time. Or even beforehand. Like knowing we're going to feel it, what can we prevent through like preemptive tending?
Yes.
Yeah.
Which goes back in part to the communication and compassion piece, but also what we talked about in the retreat about making things explicit,
yeah.
Meaning not naughty, but meaning direct and out loud and on the table for everyone to see. So for example, I said my needs for ISSDD are that I need to be able to go through my slides that morning, and then I need a break after my presentation, and then I'll regroup and meet you somewhere else. And now, in real life, that is not what's happening. They have scheduled my plenary.
Well, even before that, before your plenary, they have scheduled the meeting for all the people teaching class.
Wait, what?
That's the PTP meeting is from 11:30 to 12:30. And then you start your presentation at 1.
Wait, what?
I'm sorry.
And I got an email that after my plenary, before the panel presentation, they have scheduled me for a book signing that I didn't even know was happening.
Okay, so what you need for the day is time beforehand to read your slides and then a break after. What is actually happening is we will be in a meeting beforehand about teaching. You'll have a half an hour to try to eat or something. Then you'll do your plenary. Then there's a half hour break, which is when you're signing your book. And then there is a panel immediately after that.
A panel.
Matthew Robinson from McLean.
Yes. Which brings up the other stressor of all the online stuff that is happening that I really don't want to be a part of. I mean, I want to support people.
Right.
I'll invite people. Hey, come on the podcast. Say your thing. Be yourself. And let people learn and choose for themselves what resources they want. I am pro supporting people. I do not want to be in the drama. I do not want to live and react in the world around me in an activated state. I have my own stuff that activates me already that I'm working really hard on. And I want to focus on you and my real life and my children and my work. And that's plenty of activating stuff for me. I don't need that. So I'm not on social media. And I am so anxious and overwhelmed by it. And also, I can't not sit there.
Right.
So the story of the panel is that I got an email from Michael Salter saying, well, no. So just a review. I want to recap just the timeline of this.
A recap within the recap episode. I love it.
Yes.
So meta.
So last year, ISSTD asked me to, did I say that right? ISSTD. Okay. ISSTD asked me to do the plenary presentation for this year. And I signed the contract the week before the McLean video came out last year.
That was perfect timing.
Right? Story of my life.
Okay. Yeah. So I know I need to decide my own decisions. That's the healthy thing, right? Mm-hmm. It's the healthy thing to make my own decisions. And also, I want my intent to be clear, is that I was already on this trajectory. And as long as that trajectory is healthy for me and helpful to other people, then I need to continue to use my voice and be myself where my own path takes me. And that is really important to me.
Yeah.
I stayed out of the online drama stuff last year. And I don't mean drama in a minimizing. I mean, it was very dramatic. Mm-hmm. So I'm sorry if I'm using English poorly there, but I want to be clear. Until, like, there was still no one to say anything. And that's when I recorded the video response episode. And you and I talked about it at ISSTD last year in our recap episodes, mm-hmm. because it was happening at the time and we couldn't not speak about it.
Right.
And also, I took those episodes down because I did not want to perpetuate drama. So I don't know yet, is it one of those things like you have said about other things where we actually need to not edit that out because it's part of history and we don't want to wash over that? Or is it we do want to edit that out and then put the episodes back up because we don't want to keep things stirred up? When it is the online world, that's much harder for me to see.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know if it's important, but part of what was going on last year was not only were those pieces present, but you were doing the social media presence for ISSTD during the conference.
I forgot about that.
So you were the one doing their like Twitter posts and stuff, which is not at all what you do. So it was kind of shocking that they would even want you to do that. But that's what you, so you were in the middle of having to try to present ISSTD in a good light while this drama, you know, drama fighting, hurt feelings was happening.
People were so wounded.
Yeah. And you were right in the middle of it.
Well, and I want to be clear about that. When I say these people were responding from an activated state,
yeah.
that's appropriate. They were hurting. Right. That yes. is the response to being harmed.
Yeah.
So I don't at all mean to minimize that. I just want to live there. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to respond and communicate effectively. So what happened since then is that sometime last fall, summer, I can't remember, honestly, Michael Salter emailed me and asked me to be on a panel at this conference about the online community with Michael, with
Matt Robinson, Matthew Robinson.
With Matt Robinson. Which shocked me, both that he was being included and that they would want me included, because I don't know how I represent plurality when I am like, I am having a plural experience, but DID is my diagnosis and I want to get better. I don't like it.
Yeah.
Which is not very good at being plural proud.
No.
So I'm also not a content creator on social media. I know there's the podcast. It's weird to think of me in that context. So I get that that's a thing, that I am talking about dissociation, that I'm journaling out loud, that I am researching and sharing what I find as I find it. But I don't think of myself or identify as a content creator, and I'm not on the other social media platforms.
Mm-hmm.
So I cannot represent them. I do not at all pretend to speak for them or to them. And I don't know that the panel will even like what I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really struggling with that. The other thing that has happened in the background is that I have been talking with Rich Lowenstein a lot. And
sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just going to add for context, if people don't know, the first video or the first time that there was like a presentation about the lived experience, social media stuff, Rich Lowenstein and Matt Robinson were there. And then the video from McLean came out with Matt Robinson.
Right.
So just to let people know where the Rich Lowenstein comes in, like he was in the first training that was talking about it.
Right. So the McLean video that happened last spring,
mm-hmm.
Rich Lowenstein and Matt Robinson had done a presentation the fall before.
Yeah.
That's the one we talked on the podcast that we didn't even want to recap because we were throwing popcorn and washi yes. tape at the screen.
Yes. It was our version of a football game, right? Like we had feels about it.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So since then, I have actually been talking to Rich Lowenstein a lot, not from an activated state. And I don't mean that's better. I don't mean that I'm snottier or more valuable. I don't mean anything like that. I just mean because of privilege of connections, like I'm on the treatment guidelines team, things like that. We have common and shared friends. I can approach that relationally and effectively from a non-activated state to try and connect.
Yes. Can I tie back really quickly just to one thing?
Yes.
Like the activated state you were in earlier when we found the number thing on that Excel spreadsheet, you couldn't even find the steps to try to figure out what was happening. And it was a very simple thing, right? So when you're activated like that, it's really hard to solve problems or even make sense logically of things. So you've been able to communicate with him in an non-activated state where you could figure out that it was just a column error on your spreadsheet.
Right, right. So exactly. So I have been able to have conversation with him. He has been receptive to our conversation. He and Bethany Brand, who I know also has put out more research than anyone ever about DID. So yes, do we want things to be better? Yes, are there other things to study? And also, no, we can't do better than Bethany Brand. That's not a thing.
Yeah.
It is not possible. She's done amazing work. And she and Rich Lowenstein have released a new article just last month that is so powerful about DID, about the structural dissociation battle, and about why psychodynamic and relational therapy is an absolute must. It is a profound article. I think it is so important. For me and my world, I feel like this is the most important article that has come out since my article in 2019 about the plural community. I don't mean everyone is going to like it, but I think it is so important that I am going to, in other episodes, literally walk through the article, which is very long. I know it will be more than one episode. Not everyone will like it, but I will link to the article. I will share the article. I have permission to share the article, and I'm going to walk through why I think it is so important. And I have also sent it to Sue Baker and Joan Turkis for their course updates,
yes,
because I think it's that important. And talking about synchronicity, I think it belongs in the class you and I are about to teach next week.
Oh, wow.
So like course one, class four, mm-hmm, is when I think it needs to be.
Wow.
But it's very DID specific. So I don't know that they will include it because we don't actually talk about DID until course two.
Right. It might have to wait till course two.
But it's all psychodynamic, which is what we're about to teach this, mm-hmm, week. So anyway, so I just want to say that's already going. He's got my books. We're going to meet at the conference and have a conversation there. He's coming to hear my presentation for the plenary. He will hear the panel. I have no idea what's going down with the panel. I'm very anxious about it.
That sounds terrifying.
It is. I am absolutely terrified. And they have scheduled this panel directly after my plenary.
30 minutes after.
Are you kidding me?
With the book signing in the middle. I'm so sorry.
I can't even.
Yeah, so we are going to have to find good plans for navigating that mess.
Well, part of that too is that one of the things I learned from the retreat that was really helpful for me through the repair process was they basically said the issue that we have is that you
are not caring well for yourself. So then not just the avoidant piece of, okay, I have to shut everything down, so now it stops, but also I do too much, so now I'm out and there's nothing left, so it all stops. Mm-hmm. Either way, care stops. That is my care buster, those two things.
Yeah.
I'm sure I have more, but those are the two in this context, right? Yeah. And so one thing I'm already doing and planning and have talked with my therapist about is that I can't do everything. So this year, for the first time, I did not do DID Awareness Day with ISSDD. I told them I cannot because I have to focus on the plenary and the panel.
Yeah.
It does not mean it's not important to me. It does not mean I'm not sad to miss out. It does not mean I don't want to connect with the people. It means I literally have to prioritize how thin I can spread myself because I cannot survive what I have been doing. Yeah. Literally.
Literally.
The other thing I did was we actually chose not to do healing together this year, as far as seeing, like, sitting and watching the whole thing and recapping. Mm-hmm. I did buy a ticket at the last minute, which is usually how I do it. And I did drop in on a couple, and I did, but I did buy the ticket so I can watch it over time because they save the videos for a while. But I did not do the whole, I have to push myself through the whole weekend and see everything right now and not miss a single thing and then talk about it. I could not.
Yeah.
Not this year.
Yeah.
So I have arranged those things. I have arranged Nathan to be here, Nathan and the boys coming here mm-hmm. to visit these kids. And it's actually their spring break, so that's perfect timing. They will have a blast and very low key pressure on anyone because spring break. So I don't have to worry about those pieces while I'm gone. And I don't know that I'll do anything else at ISSTD. I might, mm-hmm. but this year, that is my thing.
Yeah.
And that's all I've got.
But that's a lot. And it's more than enough.
Yeah. What have been some of your ideas of how to handle that day for you?
Well, speaking of care busters, I have only been focusing on what to do for you. I am not sure yet, but I think it will be important for me to talk with my therapist specifically about plans for what I'm doing during and then after, and maybe having options of things.
We also talked that after the stress of the day, we might need to just go play.
Yes.
Like go out and do something completely unrelated.
Yeah. So I am researching to see if there are fun things to do. And each time I find something really fun, they're like closed already that day.
Oh no.
So I'll keep looking. We'll find something.
Well, and also I might just need to go to bed and cry.
Yeah. Yeah.
I am a little anxious about that. And I'm sorry that that impacts you.
Yeah, it's understandable. I think it will be good that morning if we can go swimming. If it's not busy, move our bodies. It would be better to go swimming after, but I think it'll be busy and maybe you won't have time.
You know what would be cool? Just an idea for you to consider with your therapist and negotiate with care busters. Mm-hmm. What if the day after we made like your yes day, mm-hmm. like we do with the kids? I'm like, just this day, do you want to go to a session? Do you not? Do you want to stay in bed? Do you want to get up? Do you want to go swim? Do you want ice cream for breakfast? Like what is your, what would a yes day for you look like?
It is something to consider. Well, no, I immediately think, well, you will need repair that day, so I can wait. That's what I do.
I'll be done by then.
Oh, yeah.
It's all fine. I'm good.
As soon as it's over, you're done. It's great. False. That is not actually true. That is the trick you tell yourself.
Oh.
Think it's okay.
It will be, won't it? I want it to be over.
I know you do.
Please let it be done.
But you do have that idea of like if you just push through, then it'll be okay once it's over.
That is my daydream.
It is.
I just have to cross it off the list and it's fine.
Right. In reality, what happens is you push through and you cross it off the list. But then as soon as it's done, you're gone and all your others come out and are very distressed. So you lose time and everything is fine. But it is not actually fine. You can edit that if you need to.
No, that's fair.
Yeah. That's what happens.
I'm sorry. That's what they were saying at the retreat, too, as part of care.
Yeah.
They're like, could you please get on board with yourself?
Right. Right. Well, that's having to know, right? Instead of only your experience of if you push through, then everything's fine afterwards. Because for you, it is. Because you don't also get their pieces of it's not okay.
Oh, so I don't even know those pieces.
You don't even
ding,
know.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yes. Like for you, it really is fine at the end, but it's because you're missing time and everyone else is the one dealing with that. Not external, like internally, they're the ones that are not okay, but you're not getting that information.
Like because I hijacked time and spoons to get the pushing through done.
Probably.
So everything's just out of balance.
Well, and the things you're doing are really hard and activating for some inside, but not for you necessarily. Mm-hmm. So they're all activated, but you're just pushing through. And so when you like are done and gone, then all their activated stuff comes out. Sorry.
Well, that would explain why things would be a crisis when I thought they were okay.
Ding, ding, ding.
I'm sorry.
Which is also when I'm saying, hey, something might be wrong. I feel like you're not okay. Like everything's fine.
It's great.
Yeah. For you, it is. Not everyone. I'm sorry if that's too much. We can take that out.
No, I don't need it to be taken out. I think it's very authentic. I am just, this is an example, like right now, you are seeing the distress on my face, but my distress is not with what you said. My distress is that I am horrified that there is that much happening in my life that I am not even aware of still.
Right? It's terrifying.
Like, when does that even get better? It has been a decade.
Yeah. It's terrifying. I wish I knew when it gets better. Like, let's put on the calendar. May 25th. It's better.
That's what my therapist made me do.
What?
My therapist, my first therapist. When the pandemic happened, that was her response. We don't know what this is going to be, but just put a date on a calendar that tells you we're going to be okay. And then when the date comes, you will know that you were okay. But I was not okay for 2 years more.
That's gaslighting.
What?
Like her saying you're going to be okay on that day. No, you can't promise that. But if your therapist tells you you will be, then you have to believe that.
You have to fawn it.
Right.
But I couldn't, and that's why I lost her. Whoa. That just made me nauseous.
Yeah, we can't put it on a date on a calendar because we don't know. I'm sorry.
This is why listening to the OG episodes is a problem, because it's like, oh, that's what happened. And also, it's the only way to heal so that it doesn't keep happening.
Yeah. Well, and also there's still a lot of really good pieces. Like, you wouldn't just want to throw it all away because there's, the girls were making cupcakes today, right? And what if you cracked an egg and then dropped an eggshell in it? You don't want to just throw out the whole thing because there's one eggshell. You just dig out an eggshell, but keep all the good. There's a lot of really good stuff in the OG episodes.
Thank you for helping me with them.
You're welcome. Thank you for letting me. I am a super fan. I don't know if you knew that or not.
Well, now we're going to go because we are going to recap an episode that you were doing so we could put them up. And you were like, whoa, this is the thing where you avoid something. And then because you were avoiding it, you ended up reenacting it.
Yeah.
Can I tell you how happy I am to be looking at that?
I'm really sorry.
I think you're a little bit excited.
I think the excitement you're seeing might be about cupcakes because I think they're almost ready. And also it will be fun.
Would you like a little cupcake break instead of pushing through?
Yes. Just for a minute.
I think it's a great idea.
Okay.
How does this feel?
Way better than I thought it was going to be.
Was there anything we avoided?
Oh, probably lots.
How are we going to know?
We'll listen to it again in 6 months and be like, oh my goodness, what were we thinking?
Maybe in 5 years.
Oh, 5 years. Okay, better.
Okay, wait. Don't stop listening. We actually have a PS that we need to add because we were so avoiding fireballs that we literally did it again and forgot to answer the question.
Well, yeah, I interrupted us to explain what a fireball was and Care Busters, and then we never talked about fireballs.
We just took off with Care Busters.
Yeah.
Hey, high five for Care Busters.
Yay.
Busted that care. Fireballs are a codependency problem.
Yeah.
How would you explain fireballs? That came from your therapist.
Came from my therapist.
My therapist-in-law.
Yes. Well, basically, it's something, I'm going to butcher this, like my pursuing when I'm getting anxious about attachment, that's my fireball. Meaning I have to heal that. I have to figure that out and work on it myself. I can't throw it at you, which is what I'm doing when I'm pursuing and saying, fix this, fix this, fix this for me, right?
I can't rescue you.
Yeah.
Which then looks sometimes like not accepting someone's fireball or passing the fireball back looks like really hard boundaries sometimes. Mm-hmm. I don't mean hard as inflexible, inflexible.
Rigid.
Rigid, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean hard as in it's so painful and difficult.
Yeah.
Of, I just can't, that's your thing. And the same for me, what is my fireball? You have to sit back.
Well, yours is like when you just want to shut everything down.
Oh, I can't because everyone's actually still there in the outside world.
Yeah. So it would be if I were codependently managing your fireball, I would just let you shut everything down and pretend I wasn't here until you were ready to come back.
So for you, the boundaries of sending my fireball back to me is actually saying the things.
Mm-hmm.
You have to say the hard things, even if you're afraid it's hurting me.
Yeah.
And that's hard.
It sucks.
Fireballs are brutal.
Yeah.
That's why they're called fireballs.
Yes. Thanks for that, therapist.
Ugh, therapists are the worst.
No, she's my Linda. She's not the worst.
She's amazing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We have our Lindas.
Yeah.
I think that's why it all hurts so much.
So much.
Because we're doing the work.
Yeah.
That was the last thing that I had as a PS. Something that I heard. And again, I don't know where I heard it because it's just on a post-it.
Without citations.
With no citations. But it talked about how you don't actually want to date someone who only gives you butterflies, even though butterflies feel exciting. And anyone in dating that, like, it will feel good of butterflies, you want to date someone who calms your nervous system because that's who you feel safe with.
Wow. What if that person both gives you butterflies and calms your nervous system?
But I think that's possible because mm-hmm. sometimes our nervous system is hypo-aroused. And butterflies bring it up to baseline.
Mm-hmm. I was saying that because that's what you do.
Aww. Well, I wanted to share that because that's what you do for me. Of why conversations that are so hard and everything we've worked through this last year are so exactly right. Like, that's why it's possible.
Right.
Like, we are not still growing our relationship because it's been easy. We are becoming something and more than either of us have ever experienced before because we are both present and doing the work.
Right. We are not actually growing tomatoes here, which tomatoes here, you just throw some seeds out there and you'll have tomatoes in 3 months. It's ridiculous. We're growing like really hard things to grow. You have to tend to and work on and pay attention to.
Are the huckleberry.
We're growing huckleberry.
because we are growing in a world of deprivation. No, I'm sorry I said that.
No.
But we had the best huckleberry pie and it was really good.
Huckleberries are amazing.
But they're hard to gather.
They're very hard. They're and hard to get.
Bears are trying to kill you while you do.
If you're not careful. Yep.
But the bears don't win. Pie wins.
Pie always wins.
Thank you for listening. Your support of the podcast, the workbooks, and the community means so much to us as we try to create something together that's never been done before. Not like this. Connection brings healing. And you can join us on the community at www.systemspeakcommunity.com. We'll see you there.